Almar Latour is the publisher of The Wall Street Journal and the CEO of Dow Jones. One responsibility that he did not expect when he took this job in 2020 was negotiating the release of a hostage held by Vladimir Putin. On March 29, 2023, Evan Gershkovich, one of the journal's correspondents covering Russia, was meeting with a source at a steakhouse when FSB agents arrested him and charged him with espionage, an allegation that he and the journal said was absurd. The U.S. government agreed. In less than 2 weeks' time, the State Department declared that Evan was wrongfully detained, which is an official status that commits the Biden administration to work for his release. Latour has played a key role in the legal and diplomatic effort to free Evan. He's worked with the Biden administration, foreign governments, and through private channels to figure out what exactly Putin wants to secure the Wall Street Journal reporter's freedom. I spoke with Latour earlier this week to learn the inside story of this effort. We discussed how the shadow of basketball star Brittany Griner's detainment in Russia is influencing talks to bring Evan home, what Evan's detention means for Paul Whelan, who has been imprisoned in Russia since December 2018 and is the only other American there considered by the U.S. to be wrongfully detained. I'll sue Kermasheva, a Russian-American journalist who was arrested by Russian authorities in October 2023, is fighting for that status. We also discussed why the Russian hitman Vadim Krasikov, who is serving a life sentence in Germany for murder, may be the key to unlocking a deal with Putin, and whether the reports of a joint U.S.-German effort that would have traded Krasikov for Evan, Whelan, and the late Alexei Navalny were accurate. And we talked about how the 2024 election may affect Evan's fate. I'm Ryan Lizza, and this is Playbook Deep Dive. Let's talk about the efforts to get him back. I want to start at the current moment in time, and then we'll sort of backfill some of the attempts here to the extent that you can talk about them. What is the current status of the U.S. government's efforts to get him back to the U.S.?
Without speaking for the administration in any form, I would characterize it as a very intense effort to get Evan back. There are people dedicated to situations like these in the State Department. The Special Presidential Envoy for Hostage Affairs is a unit within the State Department that concentrates on cases like these, not necessarily around press freedom, but around Americans who are wrongfully detained. There are many senior administration officials who have commented. The president, of course, has commented on the case. There is just a lot of activity from the White House, from the State Department, and then many, many others who may have a peripheral involvement or an occasional involvement in this. And so what has been very impressive in the past year is how people have coalesced around this cause and how so many people are giving it their all. You know, that said, you know, the outcome is sort of binary. He's either free or he's not. And so far, you know, if the question is, has enough been done? Well, we'll know that when he walks free.
Yeah. Almar, one of the eye-opening pieces of reporting that the Journal had this week about this case is some of the backstory that has been in the ether about one of the potential complicated prisoner swaps to get him out that involves Navalny before he died, that involves this Putin friend and assassin who is in prison in Germany, Vadim Krasikov. And there's been a lot of intrigue surrounding that potential deal. Can you tell us what you're comfortable telling us about what happened there?
Well, so over the past few months, just in the past year, there have been many forays into the realm of trying to free Evan, coming up with scenarios. And there are different channels for that. First, there's the the publicity around Evan that keeps him in the news, and that helps with making sure that his release or the fight for his release is a priority with the administration. You know, there's so many competing priorities that happen. Then there's the official diplomacy that takes place that, yeah, in my view, would include signals that the president or the White House might send publicly, but also a lot that happens behind the scenes bilaterally on a multilateral basis. And then there is what I would call private diplomacy. We have retained a law firm that has, among its many specialties, hostage affairs. And so creating additional channels to find a solution, because you never know in cases like these where the eventual solution is going to come from. And so it's important for us at the Wall Street Journal as an institution, but also I think for the administration to have all these paths work simultaneously. So if that sounds complicated, it's because it is. And I think some of the reporting that you've read that I can't really dissect and I can't really comment on blow by blow. So it reflects at a minimum that these cases and the potential solutions often happen in very muddled terrain and very blurry circumstances where there just are a lot of variables.
Let me ask you this, and obviously, you're professional, you're not going to say anything that would jeopardize this effort in any way, but do you feel like the German government has been a good partner in this effort? Do you feel like the German government has understood how important this case is to the administration? Or would you like them to do more?
Well, we want everybody to do more until he's out, right? And so until he's out, not enough has been done by anyone. And so that goes for all of us. So we're in good company, but we're confident that at some point he will be released. I think on the specific Germany question, on this private diplomacy path, we have met a lot of people from a lot of different countries. We have traveled with Evan's parents to different spots, including very publicly to Davos recently, where they had a chance to meet with world leaders. And so without commenting specifically on the Germans, we've had a chance and will continue to take the opportunity to meet with world leaders, or for the parents to meet with world leaders, or lawyers to meet with world leaders, in addition to whatever the U.S. administration does on that front. And I think wherever and whenever we've done that, there has been a deep understanding of the importance of this problem. That it's, of course, when faced with the parents who are heroic and resilient and inspiring, you realize, and I've seen senior figures on the world stage realize how much pain this causes for one family. Then, in addition, I think there's a realization that this case reverberates even beyond one individual, that the wrongful incarceration of a journalist has wider implications, very negative implications for press freedom. And so I do think that we've seen that awareness take hold with world leaders in Western Europe and around the world, and certainly also in the US.
I wanted to ask you about one of the stranger parts of the last year and this effort, and that is Tucker Carlson's interview with Vladimir Putin, where he raised releasing Evan. What did you and the Journal learn from that exchange? And was it useful? And I'd also curious if you had any contact with Tucker. I know your reporters certainly had contact with him after, because the Journal has reported some details. But did he reach out at all, or did he just take it on his own initiative to mention Evan?
I can't speak to whom Tucker may have reached out to or not. There was, I think, a public awareness and certainly also an awareness in this building that he was going to have that interview. And I think that was widely announced. And I think at least I was under the impression that the topic might come up. At least to me, there wasn't a direct request or any notification of that sort, nor were we seeking that per se. I was more focused, and I think we were more focused on Putin's response to this, which...
What did you make of it?
Well, it reinforced the notion that this was something very deliberate, and that there was some forethought, that there was no surprise to this question, or the answer didn't seem so spontaneous off the cuff.
He was weirdly honest about it, or sort of like there was no BS about what was going on here. Or am I reading that incorrectly?
Yeah, it's honest is not a word that I would use in a sentence containing Vladimir Putin. So I think you could see at that moment, I think, so the transactional nature. And so I think it was a naked portrayal of sort of the motivation, in my view. Did it spin things forward? Yeah, not that I could tell. And Evan is still incarcerated.
So in a weird way, it wasn't like it gave you a little bit more optimism, like, okay, this guy's just looking for a deal and we've got to find the deal that will satisfy this lunatic.
Well, hostage taking works like this to begin with. So there's nothing.
You knew that already.
This is the whole game, right?
Yeah.
We take somebody and we want a ransom or a trade or something in return. I think often.
By this point, nobody's pretending that that's not what this is about. There's no pretension on the Russian side in the privacy of these negotiations that. Sorry, Evan's a really important criminal in our system, and we just we don't mess around with trading them away.
I'm not saying that, and I can't speak to specifically what the Russians have said or not said. But what I can say is that I would dismiss any sort of portrayal that this is anything other than seeking a trade. It comes on the back of another trade that has been made involving Brittany Griner. There's very little that is truthful that comes out of the Kremlin these days. And so I think it has to be seen. So even quasi-frank comments like that have to be seen in that transactional light and not in any different way. But there was no surprise like, oh, really? This has got to lead to a deal and that can be successful? So yes, of course. That was nothing new to anyone who had been involved in the case, or anyone who, unlike me, who works on hostage cases like these all the time. And there didn't seem to be anything new in that.
Where were you when you learned that he had been arrested back on March 29th, 2023?
Yeah, I was in South Africa. There was a little period that preceded that moment where I got a phone call from my head of HR and head of security saying that we may have some difficult news. There might be a very difficult situation. A reporter in Russia did not show up at the appointed time. And that was really just a moment because we have like many major news organizations, a very strict security protocol where if you go out on something sensitive, reporting assignment, or find yourself in a danger zone, there's a significant amount of planning that happens. And there are appointed times when you check in, and just depending on the situation, it might be some tracking. And so, you have that for a reason. But when then somebody doesn't show up, which was this very first moment of this saga, for me at least, that was alarming.
And that initially, I suppose you didn't know why he'd missed his check-in.
No, and you hope for the best, of course, and there could be many reasons as to why someone doesn't check in. But then another check-in point was missed, I believe, and I might be skipping some steps here because it's a year ago, which is terrible, of course, in its own right. But so a little bit later, it became clear that a second checkpoint had been missed. And Evan did not show up at his apartment. This is some hours later. And so, went from a suspicion that something had gone wrong to sort of an ever stronger suspicion that something had gone wrong. And there were also at that point some rumors or at least some noise that had reached me indirectly that he might have been arrested. Then, some hours later, there was a confirmation of some sort that happened. And then for me, the next morning, very early morning in the U.S. and on the East Coast, the FSB put out a statement.
The FSB statement was the first official word.
That was the first official word with context as to what this was, and that contained this espionage lie immediately. And when you hear in a hostage situation that somebody has been taken, or any precarious situation that you go into out in the field, maybe at first your instinct is let's address this in the quiet. Let's have the conversations that we need to have with authorities, in this case, maybe with an embassy or with the right team. But this got tossed out into the open right away. And so there was never really a chance to have that conversation, which is very different than maybe some other cases where people were arrested and there was just a greater period, at least outwardly, of uncertainty. But here, I think it shows the deliberate nature of what has happened. It got very deliberately pushed out into the world with a very clear message from the Russian Federation.
Let me ask you about, before that moment, two quick things. One, what were there signs of the deteriorating situation for journalists in Russia? I mean, we all know what was going on in the world, but was Evan picking up on that? Were your editors, was the newsroom aware that suddenly things were shifting into a much more dangerous point for Western journalists there? If you could talk about that a little bit. And then two, the story that the journal published today, Wednesday, as we're talking, is really, an amazing piece of journalism. And I assume you're very intimately aware of all the details of that story. But it talked about how Putin was looking for a new pawn at this point in time. And I'm just curious if that was something that was on anyone's radar back then, or that's all something we kind of realize in hindsight.
Yeah, I think when you read that somebody is being falsely accused of something, you understand that there is some motivation to drive that, whether that is defaming Western press or whether it's something else altogether. But I think at that moment, a year ago, we were institutionally obviously aware that the circumstances in Russia and also in some other places around the world were just more difficult for reporters. And when people are sent out into the field, it's with their consent, with an elaborate discussion with security. And so we had been monitoring it. That we know that there was a methodical approach to hostage taking as it looks today. It's easy to say with hindsight. But the situation did not seem accidental.
The other wrongfully detained American in the Russian system is Paul Whelan. How much do the folks like yourself who are advocating on Evan's behalf coordinate with your counterparts who are advocating on Paul Whelan's behalf?
Now, first off, my heart goes out to Paul and Paul's family, and they've been at this for way, way too long, 5 years. We want him to be released. And we think it's incredibly important. Our task here is to focus on our colleague. The government is focusing on a broader set of hostage situations. I do think that with the spotlight that we've deliberately put on Evan, and there's been so much support, including from people like yourself, there's been, over the past year, a greater awareness of the hostage situations that exist in Russia and even elsewhere. And so in that sense, the Evan situation, when we talk about it, there's implicitly that, of course, pertains also to Paul, as well as to Alsu, who recently got apprehended there for what seems like bogus reasons.
Sadly, the court recently extended Evan's imprisonment by 3 more months. What's your reading of how the 2024 presidential campaign and political situation in the United States may or may not play into these efforts to get Evan back?
I think at this point that would be speculative. So we have had bipartisan support for Evan's release, and that has been very consistent throughout. I think the extension that was made clear this week through June 30th, it has the air of sounding official, but all these things are really arbitrary and could, I think, in parallel with the official legal system, could be decided separately if the Kremlin wanted to speed things up or slow things down. So I mainly look at these extensions as the language of the Kremlin and whether they have what they want or not. And so this means that at least for the next few months, theoretically, they don't yet have what they want.
One other thing about the previous attempts or successful attempts to get wrongfully detained Americans out of Russia. What did you learn from those episodes? What did you learn from the Brittany Griner episode? And she was swapped for a notorious arms dealer, Victor Bout. I mean, this is all new to you. You were thrust into this. I assume you'd never been in a situation like this. You have a background as a journalist, but not as a hostage negotiator.
Yeah, and to be clear,
what did you learn from those?
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not a hostage negotiator. No, I'm
trying. Fair, sorry.
Yeah,
just as someone that's in the middle of this crisis and trying to get your reporter back.
Yeah, and so. A very different situation, but 2 decades ago, so we did have a situation that did not end well when Daniel Pearl was taken hostage. And and so there is an acute awareness institutionally here that you have to take these situations incredibly seriously. So I think that was one lesson, that there's no guarantee for the outcome necessarily. And so you have to give it your all. And I think that led to a very speedy organization around this, where we set up various teams, a comms team, a legal team in the US, a legal team in Russia, and a lot of other different channels. So that's one. I think on the Griner case, one conclusion was that putting a spotlight on a situation like this helps. It helps with the prioritization. And in the immediate aftermath of Evan's arrest, we did have the chance to learn from people who had gone through this. And so that was, I think, an important element. And I think that has been a dominant theme for the past year, to make sure that, as the world is just changing seemingly every day and there are big events taking place, that having that voice, having that spotlight helps his case. So that was an awareness. And then I think the transactional nature of, in the Griner case, having a major arms dealer traded against a basketball player of renown, that shows the crass nature of a situation like this. So I think those lessons and a few other things quite quickly found their way into our bloodstream. As we try to get organized around this, I think having the realization that you need to stay in close contact with family, with the government, and bringing to bear to anyone you really know who might influence the situation. So bring in all your resources. I think those are all lessons, at least in hindsight, that I think we picked up or we found out along the way.
Omar, I want to ask you one last question, and thank you for doing this. And the last thing is just to explain to listeners who haven't been following this case, one, Why should they care about this? Why is this important? And what can people do if they care about this and want to help?
Well, this case is important because it pertains to one man's freedom, and that matters. Evan is a journalist, and he was just doing his job. He was arrested for doing his job. And when that can happen, and nobody says anything about it, that has a tremendous negative impact on society, on free press. His arrest, in my view, was a direct attempt to suppress press freedom, to send a signal that you are not safe as a journalist in Russia. If we let that go by unnoticed, if we don't say anything about it, if we don't fight for Evan's release, that signals to Russia that this is okay behavior, that makes any chance for reliable information to get to Russia even more difficult. But I believe it can also be contagious, in that this may give other dictators, strongmen, the idea that, hey, there's another way to deal with press that you don't like, and that is just by arresting them or by taking harsher measures. And so what can you do about this? At first, I think, have this awareness and follow the case. I think it does matter to talk about it to your friends, talk about press freedom to people you know, talk to your elected officials about it. And I often get this question, like, does it really matter? But if you wear that pin, every little bit helps to support that thesis that free press is a good thing and that society needs that more than ever. And so in fighting for Evan's release, I think we can all make a statement for him, but also for society at large.
Thank you very much. Well said. And I know the Journal is doing everything they can, and so you should be commended for the efforts that you have put forward in the last year to get him out, and we hope that happens very, very soon. And thank you for taking the time to talk to us about this. I really appreciate it, Almar.
Yeah, thank you for your support, and thank you to everybody at the Journal and media and beyond who has contributed to the fight for his freedom.
And that's our show. Our producer is Kara Tabor. Our senior producer is Alex Keeney. I'm Ryan Lizza, host and executive producer of Deep Dive. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Thank you to Joe Dopkin for field production in New York. Tell us what you think about the show or who you'd like to hear on Deep Dive. You can email me at rlizza@politico.com. And please subscribe to Playbook Deep Dive wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.